The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network. For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Imagine 91 billion light years traveled like that.
Your father is lost in the universe.
My father's alive.
We believe he is, and we're here to help you find him.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we are joined by Shanna Thomas. Hello, Shanna. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Shanna is a fifth-year senior at the school that I work at. I'm an ASL studies major.
And then my minor is special education rehabilitation counseling.
Very cool.
Love it. Because at our school, you have to have a minor. I don't know if that was your experience, Tobin, but
No. I don't think it was. We were heavily encouraged to, but your students are forced to. That's good. I think that's good. it diversifies your education. That's great.
Yeah, it took me 5 years to finish. It's fine.
Yeah, again, that's true. It makes for a fifth year, I guess. Yeah.
But that was great because that means we got to keep her a little bit longer. And I've interacted with Shanna at a Black Student Union meeting. Mm-hmm. I don't think she remembers. That's fine. as well as recently at a Queer People of Color panel. Mm-hmm. And as Shanna also works as an ambassador, which is the fancy word we have for tour guides.
Yes.
On campus. So she's moving, she's shaking, she's making changes.
Yeah, good.
And I thought she would be a great addition to this conversation today. So thank you so much for joining us, Shanna. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, today we're going to talk about, this is the first time we're talking about a movie that has just been released. Today we're talking about A Wrinkle in Time from just not that long ago, a couple days ago, yeah, or weeks ago by the time you hear this episode. So yeah, this is one that we put on our schedule right away, sort of with knowing that it was coming out, sort of in anticipation. And I'm excited to sort of get into it.
So Tobin, you said, which is true, it was on our schedule from the beginning. Can you tell me why that was important to you?
Yes, sure. For me personally, a couple of reasons. One, because I went to film school with the writer of this movie, or one of the two credited writers, Jennifer Lee, who we'll talk about later on, I'm sure, who also wrote a little movie you might have heard of called Frozen, which she also co-directed and won an Oscar for. And so I know Jenna. We were in school together for 5 years. And so I've always keeping tabs on her and excited for her work coming out. And then the second reason is because I had just read this book to my son a year ago, I think, before I knew the movie was coming out. So it was sort of fresh in my head that way. And then the idea that I'm a big Ava DuVernay fan. And so I was excited for it that way. When in the process of this movie coming out, did you first hear about it? When did it come into your consciousness?
For me, I actually didn't hear a lot about it until people started talking about Black Panther. And then people got excited about the fact that there was another major movie coming out that was directed by a Black woman. And so that's when I started really paying attention to it. And then I saw who the Storm Reid, who is Meg, right? Yeah. I just saw her and I saw her hair and I saw, saw all of it. And I was like, as soon as that's out, like I'm going and seeing it. Like I was just so excited because of like, everyone keeps talking about like how excited they were about Oprah being in it. But I like was looking at this young girl and I was like, that's why I want to see it. Like that's honestly, that was my first, like, yes, that's why I want to see it, just from her own picture. I was very excited about it.
I think mine is the shallowest, and I'll own that. So I didn't have a background in the book, and I've come to learn that some people read it in school. Like for some people, it's like, oh yeah, I had to read that once or twice in school, and that was not the case for me. So I wasn't familiar with it from that.
Me either.
But then I think, honestly, I'm so sorry. I think it was when Mindy Kaling pregnancy was announced that something about Oprah sort of outed her pregnancy.
Oh,
so I was like,
great.
Oprah, Mindy Kaling, what? And I dug a little deeper. I was like, oh, and then I started, because then it got, I think, the full Disney little teaser. Right, right. Trailer. And so I started following it for that because I thought a room with Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling in it. Of those people, I guess I feel closest to Mindy Kaling. Having read both of her sort of memoir-y books, I feel like I'm a little bit more in her head than in the other two. So I, you know, putting myself in that situation, like, whoa, why are these people in a room and why am I not there? Because I don't think I'll ever be able to be in a room with Oprah, but we can hope. And I apologize to lifelong fans of it. I started the book. I was not able to finish the book before I went to see the movie. Life came up and it got a little bit lower on the list. So I read the first half of the book, which Tobin can tell you is not uncommon for me. I love a good half of a book.
Life is littered with the first half of books. Yeah.
It is. Hopefully I'm in a safe space to disclose that. But yeah, so that's, like I said, the shallowest version, but I got excited quickly.
Well, at least you read half of it. I haven't even read the book. It wasn't a required thing that I had to read or anything. And I also didn't know that this book is actually kind of old.
Yeah.
It's
1962.
And so I never really got, like, I never really knew about it until the movie. And then everyone was buying these books. And I was like, there's a series? What's happening? So, yeah.
It's an odd book. My son, I think, was maybe a little too young for it, although he kept wanting to hear the next chapter. So he didn't ever want to stop. And there are other books that he's, like Aislinn, has given up on halfway through for a variety of reasons. maybe through influence. But this one,
given up is a little judge.
But to be fair, I do it too. I'm the same way. But this is, I don't know how else to describe it. It's the questions that this movie raises that it doesn't answer are often the same ones that the book raises and or is not interested in answering. And it comes at things kind of obliquely. And I found, I don't know, Aislinn, if you agree or not, but it comes at an odd angle to character and motivation and story in kind of an unusual way. And yet there's something, I found something sort of intoxicating about the book. And underneath it all is the story of this young woman, this girl going to save her father, which I think is part of its power and translates really well.
So, Tobin, do you have two bits of film history for us for A Wrinkle in Time?
Yes. Two very short two bits because I want to get to talking about the movie. The first is that, and this has been widely reported, so it's sort of not news, but I think it's definitely for the purposes of this conversation and our show, this is a key detail. This is the first 9-digit budget movie. This is the first $100 million plus budgeted movie directed by a woman of color. And I think that that's, film has been around for 130 years, right? Yeah. Features have been around for over 100 years now. I'm not surprised, but I'm not shocked, but I'm sort of surprised in some way. I'm not sure, but I think that's a key detail to this movie. And I think plays into both the movie and in some cases, the reaction to the movie, which I hope we'll get to talk about. And the second bit is that it's just a little bit of production history. So Disney got the rights in 2010, or maybe they renewed them in 2010, and they had a writer, Jeff Stockwell, the other writer who's credited on the movie, wrote the first draft of the script. And then Disney wanted to move forward with it, but wasn't in love with the script, apparently, or it needed a new take. And so in 2014, they hired Jen, who, of course, is from, as I said before, is Frozen fame. Jen had worked on, I remember back when we were in film school, worked on a movie about a physicist, a family drama that revolved around physics and a physicist. And it was really cool to see some of that stuff sort of show up in this movie.
Oh, it's a good fit.
Yeah, it's a great fit. You can really see where it sort of, I think, where it fit for her. And so then 4 years later, this is how long these things take place, like how long it takes to make these movies, right? Like I was hired to write the script in 2014, probably has it done within a year. And then it's, you know, 3 years later and we get the movie. And so there we are. Those are our two bits for A Wrinkle in Time.
Awesome. So since we've already named some people, can we name some more, name them some more. So for A Wrinkle in Time, we have director Ava DuVernay, writers Jennifer Lee, and Jeff Stockwell.
He doesn't get a ding, but
he doesn't get a ding, right?
Not because we're dinging the women in major roles here. Yep,
love it.
I was gonna make a ding the dong joke.
Yeah, we don't ding the dong. We don't ding the dong here. Yep.
Okay, and then lead actor, we have Storm Reid, and then a few others to mention.
Yeah, let's mention them.
You gotta mention Oprah. You're gonna mention Reese Witherspoon.
You got to.
You're gonna mention Mindy Kaling. And gonna mention Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
What a cast.
What a cast. Yeah, yeah. And correct me if I'm ever wrong, Tobin.
Never,
but
never.
isn't Beyond the Lights somewhere on our list yes. to do?
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
That was, I mean, I she's so captivating. Okay. Yeah. And then also producer Catherine Hand.
That's the most dings we've gotten to have on this show.
And one of them is Oprah.
And one of them is Oprah. We really deserve like a gong or something instead of a ding, but you know, we'll do that another time.
Tobin, can you give us, please, the briefest of plot summaries?
Briefest plot summary. Adapted from the 1962 novel, A Wrinkle in Time is the story of Meg Murray, a picked-on, self-doubting tween whose scientist father disappeared 4 years ago while searching for a way to travel across the universe using only his mind. Meg, joined by her eerily prescient younger brother Charles Wallace and a friend from school named Calvin, sets out to find her father with the aid of three mysterious beings, Mrs. Witch, Mrs. What's-It, and Mrs. Who. Meg eventually finds her father on an evil, universe-destroying planet called Kamazots, where she almost loses Charles Wallace to the darkness before tapping into her own power, the power of love, to bring everyone home and restore order to the universe. So that's the, in a nutshell, the plot of this movie. I'd kind of like to start, if we could, there's been a lot written about and talked about this movie. You know, there's like three stages as I see it. There's the hype. There was the initial reaction to the movie, both from critics and from audiences, I guess. And then there's the reaction to the reaction. There's been sort of, I think, I only saw the movie last night. So I sort of had been through all three waves of that before I saw the movie. But I'm curious, as a movie, sort of aside from all the other sort of stuff, what did you guys think of this as a movie?
I thought it was gorgeous to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That was, it's really, really pretty to watch.
The scope. Particularly, I'm thinking of the first time that they, I would say, wiggle through the plains of existence into that just vast countryside, and you see, I guess you'd see it in the beans in their backyard, but this, you know, kind of in their full mm-hmm. glory, and just the lights and the I don't know, freshness is not a word in that, but you know what I mean. Like I felt outside. Yeah. And so I do think in the world building way, visually, I think they did a stunning job. You know, I gotta love a evil little kid. Who doesn't?
That actually really scared me. Like, I was really impressed with that kid's acting. Like, he scared me. I was like, and you, how old was he? Like, as an actor, I don't even know.
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. I can look it up. But that, thanks for saying that too, Shanna. The other thing that you and I just spoke for 30 seconds about the movie in passing earlier this week. And so I think visually stunning. I think the chemistry between, I mean, absolutely the tween chemistry was off the charts, but also between Meg and Charles Wallace, that relationship had to be amazing. Mm-hmm. As well as the Reese and Zach Galifianakis in one scene, mm-hmm. right, was so, I could feel the strings of the relationships
yep.
between the people in a way that was striking for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, especially just because I'm a very empathetic person. Like, it's really intense for me at times. Mm-hmm. And so throughout that entire movie, I was just feeling all of it. And I've mm-hmm. felt movies in the past like that have struck my heart in some way. But the chemistry within those kids and how it made me honestly happy that they showed kids could have that strong of feelings. Like sometimes I feel like people are constantly saying kids don't know enough about life. They're not old enough to understand different feelings and all these things. And just watching all that chemistry between these three young kids who are actors with that much chemistry and that beautiful just of how they were acting, I was like, that's huge. I think that's really important to recognize.
At its best, this movie is immersive in the way that the characters are relating to one another. There's a quality that to Jen's writing, she writes about love, about loving relationships very convincingly, I think. And so often I am with them together and their bond feels so strong. The part where I think it's at its best for me is when, or maybe not best, but it's most striking, is when Meg finally finds her father.
Oh God.
Like that scene. And also this becomes the Chris Pine Appreciation Podcast.
It has been, hasn't it? Oh goodness.
Yeah, our ongoing, this is a through line in our show, but he really invests in that moment and doesn't seem to be talking or playing down to us or to Meg. And I think that's a really powerful thing in this movie that the characters feel, or that Ava DuVernay and Jen allow the characters the dignity of having this full, rich emotional life. And I think that's a great thing.
And I think for me, without the combination of the way it's written, the way it's directed, and the way that the characters, particularly the children, play it, without any of those components, honestly, I don't know that the story would stick with me. Mm-hmm. It is a little out there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you could say this about any story, but like without caring about the people, I'm not tethered to this beautiful world, but they kept me tethered to it.
I agree.
Yeah, that's true in the book too, I think. I have to also second some of your points, Aislinn, about the world building. I love the flower scene when they arrive on the first planet they go to, right? They travel to this planet and then these flowers that lift out of the ground and fly around. I saw this in 3D.
Oh.
I knew, Aislinn, I knew you wouldn't. So I thought, and I wasn't sure if Shanna would, so I thought one of us better see it in 3D. And that scene in particular was gorgeous in the 3D. And people have gotten on this movie a little bit. Some of the reaction to it critically has dogged the use of CGI. It feels like it just, which is crazy because like it's 2018. Show me a movie that's a big sci-fi movie that does not have a bunch of CGI in it. Like that aside from how beautiful
and also
it looks.
It's a children's story too. I think that should lend itself to fantastical.
Can we also
visuals.
Talk about the fact that people loved Avatar?
Yes.
And how much that was, I'm sorry, back up here.
Yeah.
They literally all the entire movie, like that actually really gets underneath my skin. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And people are criticizing it that badly.
Yeah, I think it makes no sense to me. And I was sort of knew that going in, like I knew this had been some of the criticism. And I think the effects in this movie are spectacular. And even all the way down to as you said, the costumes are gorgeous. The makeup work. Look, there's some people that talk about how there's just too much of it. And I think that's completely wrong. This movie needed to go big in those areas and make that kind of visual statement. And I think that there's real power in that in every section of the movie that we're in, once we're off Earth, especially. I don't fault it at all for that. In fact, I think it's using those tools really well.
Yeah,
I agree. And Shanna, I just have to say, you are welcome back anytime, because not only have we appreciated Chris Pine, but you've also shit on Avatar a little bit. And that is something I try to do all
the time. So, you're in real good company here on both those counts.
I would gladly come back anytime. This is so much fun.
We've gotten off Earth. Can we come back real quick? Having read the first half of the book, which is where Dr. Murray, the mother Dr. Right. Murray, is. And I wanted to also give, I guess we're going to give Jen, the writer, more props for that, of referring to her as Dr. Murray.
Right.
Throughout, where IMDb refers to her as Mrs. Murray, it does refer to the dad as Mr. Murray. So I'll give them both that way. But that I can think of three different times when they said the doctor's Murray or gave her her full credential and her full partnership in the science of it. And that was something that the book had. And there was in the speaking of backlash and things, the or commentary, I guess I read a little Twitter thread.
Yeah.
Is that the right term? Y'all Twitter thread. Okay. About the fans of the book missing the component of Dr. Murray making stew with a Bunsen burner because her physics lab was next to her kitchen. And that that was something that had been in iterations of it and then didn't make the final cut. And I believe it was Jen who said, oh, that was a hard one to cut. But it was sort of more important to bring out the science part. And we, you know, and why not? Why wouldn't they just get takeout? You know, in advancing it from 1962 to 2018.
Exactly.
Dr. Murray's busy. Let's just get takeout. And I thought, sure, if I was a huge fan of the book, that might have been a detail I would have missed as well. But I thought that was a beautiful response and also gave the present Dr. Murray versus the absent Dr. Murray a little more credibility. And I like that.
Yeah.
For me, the I'm curious to what you guys think of this opening Earth section where we get the initial sort of scene where they're anticipating the arrival of Charles Wallace and you get this father, daughter, mother scene and then cut ahead and he's been gone for 4 years and she goes to school and she gets in some trouble and she hits this girl in the face with a basketball. And like, is this and how is this how does this stack up for you guys in terms of the rest of the movie?
I feel like for me, the biggest thing that stood out to me was the importance. It might seem small to some people, but how much emphasis was on her hair. And how, like, as soon as Calvin was like, I like your hair. And she was like, what? No, like, honestly, hated the fact that he even said that. And then the movie was progressing and when he got to another point of like, I like your hair, she was like, thank you. And for some people that might not seem like a huge deal, but try not to get emotional here. But for a girl who personally has gone through hating her hair and going through middle school and high school and constantly straightening it, I completely damaged my hair, completely damaged it. And it wasn't until I had shaved all my hair off for St. Baldrick's at Western. And after that, I was like, I love my hair. I love the texture. And I've kept it short ever since. But it was just so important for me that they talked about that with her because it was a beautiful moment of just, God, I wish when I was 13 years old, I had the opportunity to see this movie and have that impact of your hair is beautiful. You don't have to change it because you're not having straight hair like the 90% of white girls that you see constantly in your school. And so a lot of people don't think that was a big deal maybe, but like for me, that hit home and it was just so awesome to see them just embrace that of her natural hair. And it was just, I loved it so much.
That's interesting. It stood out to me as well. Obviously differently experience wise, but I have shown the documentary Good Hair in classes that I've taught, especially in Kansas, where, you know, for some people it had never been discussed. But so, I'm wondering specifically, Shanna, how you react to my reaction, but the first time he said something, it made me a little uncomfortable.
Oh,
because I was like, oh, what does he mean? Or what? Oh, but he doesn't know her.
Yeah.
And then as he knew her better and said it again, the meaning changed for, you know, for me. And I think through her response and their relationship. So at first it was a little like, oh, and it wasn't that I was concerned that the movie was going to be disrespectful, but I was like, you know, having read the first half of the book, that wasn't a component of it. So I was like, what are they going to do to Calvin here?
I totally get where you're coming from too, just because when he first said it, I just instantly, I wanted to know Meg's reaction. And I knew she was going to react that way. And that's what I loved about it. I was like, oh my gosh, this movie is going to progress on her accepting all of her beautifulness. And I just got so excited about it. And sometimes I feel like as, how do I word this? Like for your reaction, it might have felt like that just because as you're going through life and how much we're like, hey, can you please like stop touching my hair all the time? Or you don't need to ask to touch my hair, right. Like that kind of stuff. And so automatically, I think it doesn't surprise me that was your reaction because of how much we're claiming back our hair and wanting our hair for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But for me, I instantly was just like, she's going to react like, no, it's not great. And then I'm really hoping as the movie goes along, she realizes how beautiful she is and her hair is. So, but yeah.
The other part, just real quick, of that first section to mm-hmm. answer your question, Tobin, because it was a slow burn for me, knowing that we were going to get 5-story tall Oprah. Yeah. I was sort of like, all right, what are we doing? How are we finding it? And because the book does take place in such a different time, I think that there was some of that was needed to set us up and how we are going to tell this story. But the other part that I appreciated very much was the interchange when she gets in trouble at school of Charles Wallace as a tiny kid, but very mm-hmm. studious, overhearing mm-hmm. adults, yes. and then standing up for his sister. And yeah. as someone who feels very close to their sibling, that connected me right away to their relationship right. of it doesn't matter who's older. It doesn't matter what their genders or ethnicities are, and you know that these two are mm-hmm. a team, mm-hmm. and it changed the dynamic a little bit. The way it's described in the book with Charles Wallace was that he didn't speak
right.
for a very long time to the point that there were assumptions made in the school and in the town that he had mm-hmm. cognitive delays, and that wasn't it. He was this very prescient being, but just didn't speak to people that it didn't matter to speak to. I think they interpreted that nicely mm-hmm. For this version of it, but that making that rock solid connection between the two of them that Calvin observes, I liked the beginning for that moment. Yeah. What did you think, Tobin?
I agree with all the things that you all are saying. I think that it's a testament to a movie made by so many women that mm-hmm. we are getting a depth of and the specificity of this character being Meg, of her experience at this time in her life in this place, and the bond that these siblings have. The thing I did, the part that didn't work for me here was the part with any character who was quote unquote mean. I'm thinking specifically about the mean girl, mm-hmm. which felt more like a caricature than so many of the other characters in the movie. It felt a little easy. And I don't know if that's in the performance or in the writing or what, but that, you know, that's where the movie began to feel a little, I don't think it was sort of firing on all cylinders when it was dealing with that character. And then as the movie goes along, I'm told, I love Storm Reid in this movie. I think she's magical in this movie. She can hold a close up like very few adult actors can. And you see her thinking and you see mm-hmm. her feeling, and we are allowed to see it in the way that she is framed. But we are told that she is having a really rough time and has been in other fights or something. I felt like I was being told a lot that she was a real rebel, but I didn't really see that. I saw her sort of yeah. like she gets, you know, sort of brutally insulted and she throws a basketball at a girl. Like that doesn't add up to me as troubled. And I sort of wish I had felt that a little more. If these early scenes had demonstrated that a little bit more, I might've then felt her a little bit differently about her arc as it went along, which as I say, has nothing to do with her performance. Cause I think her performance is firing on all cylinders, but that there's something in the way that the characters presented at the beginning. That then when I was told, oh, you've been having all this, you're so rebellious, you've been having all this trouble. And I think, well, that wasn't my impression of her when I had met her in this movie. She did not seem to be like, you know, rebel without a cause here, but I'm also like, I'm a man. I had a different experience of adolescence, and I don't know how. I'm trying not to sort of knock the movie for not having my experience, right? Like I don't know, but I did feel in those moments the movie felt more like a movie in those moments and less like I was just sort of experiencing the life of these characters.
I feel like how you just described all of that is when all that was happening, what I thought about is how constantly when kids are being picked on and then they fight back, they're instantly the ones being called troublemakers and all those other things. And so when they were doing that, I was like, oh, they're giving a good representation of how when children are constantly bullied and they finally stick up for themselves, they're the ones who are kicked out of the school. They're the ones who are suspended. They're not... The true ones who were antagonizing them and bullying them are not the ones who are getting punished. And so it was just a moment of like, oh yeah, here we go. Another one who finally stood up for themselves, but they're going to be the ones who are kicked out of school or get in trouble. And then they're the like, and then it was interesting when they went to the scene with her mom and her mom was like, you're going to write an apology letter to that girl. And I found it very interesting that we constantly keep telling kids that they have to apologize for sticking up for themselves when they're being put down. And so I thought that was just a way to be like, this is still happening and it's real. So pay attention to it.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I took it as in a kind of a similarity to add a tangent to your thought, that that narrative of, well, you should have known better.
Yep.
That I think the antagonized get often, well, you know, you don't listen to them or don't do this. And yeah, would throwing a basketball at someone's face, not ideal. But, you know, if everyone had the full context, like you say, Shanna, that Meg is not the problem.
Yeah.
And that I wonder, again, a little bit from the thinking about the book, that it, I don't know, troubled so much as not, you know, not demonstrating the potential people assume of her was sort of where I didn't. I guess it just speaks to it being a little bit unclear. I didn't interpret the same thing as Tobin, but it was also, I just wanted to get on with it at that point.
Yeah. You know, and it may be too, the performance of the actor who's playing the mean girl, like it just sort of felt a little stagey. That may be what it is. That felt a little stagey, whereas I'm right there with Meg. And yeah, so I don't know, because I love that scene with her mom. I mean, I felt bad about that, you know, but I mean, they're as her mom's trying to negotiate how to raise these kids and also being a parent, like I'm feeling that moment too, is, you know, my kids aren't that old, but I'm like, how do you navigate that and make them and let them allow them to stand up for themselves and yet also sort of, that's hard. That's just hard. So I agree. The movie then really, for me, begins to kick in as our beings show up, as our three glorious beings show up. Did you guys have a favorite of the three of them?
Oh, that's no, because as I try to answer that question, I circulate through. I think what movie were we? Oh, when we spoke of Wonder Woman and the way that Wonder Woman in that feature was allowed to be naive without being stupid. That she was resourceful, thoughtful, wise even, but naive of the world. I felt like there was a similar grace with which Reese Witherspoon tackled that, because she could have so easily been cloying to me. I could have been super annoyed at that being, but I think the way that she delivered it with that humor and that, you know, in the end, you know, she had always believed in her. It was just, and that's the beings, it brings us to this, but something I had written down that I want to talk about was the, how big of a part language plays. So, you know, Reese has her very specific way of talking with and not putting down, but a little bit antagonizing the kids. And then you have the Mindy in the book. That was my least favorite character of the beings. Oh. Was the Mindy Kaling quotes on a page one. I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And I it played better for me in this visually than in my own imagination failed me. But how do you not pick Oprah? I don't know. Shanna, what do you think?
I really enjoyed Reese. Her humor was just so good, and how much she was just rude, but it was like humor rude. I don't know how to explain it. I just enjoyed her, how she took on that role. And especially when they went and met, I forgot his name, but how
the happy
much
medium?
Yes. And how you could see how instantly her whole body language and how she mm-hmm. was doing mm-hmm. her persona just changed. And so I just loved the fact that she was able to do that so well. And I could get a different side of her. I just really liked it. So I honestly, I think she was my favorite.
Call me Mrs. What's It.
Mrs. Who?
No, Mrs. What's It. Mrs. Who is, oh, she's like a billion years older and way more knowledgeable.
What can I do for you, Mrs. What's It?
I caught her stealing sheets. Guys, she's harmless.
You're six. Come on. What do you know about harmless?
Have I ever been wrong?
Well, one of these days you might be Charles Wallace.
Oh, I highly doubt that. He's one of the greatest minds in recent history. He's prodigious. But of course, we can't take any credit for our talents. It's how we use them that counts.
Yeah, she was my favorite, too. They're all great, and they all embody different things, and they're as we said before, they're costumed beautifully, and yes. makeup's beautifully, and their hair is beautiful. I mean, they're just, I was going to say like confections, but that doesn't give them mm-hmm. weight, right? But there's something sort of gloriously light and also solid about mm-hmm. them. I'm not being very, very articulate with it, but Reese was by far my favorite. Like every time she was on screen, I wanted more of her, and I think that she's been I hope we'll talk a lot more about Reese Witherspoon as our podcast goes along, because she's, especially in the last 5 years or so, as she's sort of taken control of her, it feels as though from the outside she's taken control of her career in a different way.
Yes.
As she's produced all, you know, some everything from Wild and Gone Girl to Big Little Lies. Like she has carved out a niche for herself and knows what she does well. And one of the things she does well is exactly this, as you're saying, Aislinn, to not be cloying, but to also, she's treating these kids as people.
Mm-hmm.
She's not treating them as she's not talking down to them. She's not treating them as kids. You know, we haven't really talked about too much about how this movie is for kids. And that's something that gets brought up in the reaction to this movie a lot. Like people saying, look, this is you have to sort of think about this movie a little bit differently. And that this is, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way that this movie is for kids. But like, as you're saying, you're being rude to them. Like she's being rude to them, you know, because she's just like, well, we got to get going. Like this is what, like, it's just what it is.
Because they're humans.
Because they're humans. Yeah. Right. Which is great. I think she's wonderful in this movie.
I think when you were discussing how she was taking back like her role of what she wants to do in her life, I don't know if you've seen her speech when she did a speech at Glamour. I think it's called Glamour. It's a magazine or something. But she gave a speech about just the fact that she was tired of seeing roles of women being like, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. In movies, and she was sick of it, and so she decided to make her own set up and was just like, okay, I'm gonna start going through and finding scripts that we find are powerful for women and roles, because she's like, I'm sorry, but no woman in this world ever goes, what should we do now? Right. Like they are always the front thinkers, they're always trying to get things done. And so she was over it. She was ready to take on what she wanted to take on. And I think it's really important to recognize, like, honestly, like how powerful this movie was because of their powerful characters and the powerful actors that they chose to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it was such a huge part for young women and children to go see this movie, because they saw the powerfulness from these women.
As we've been talking about them, I've been picturing the various scenes where you see all three of them. And there was a moment that I loved because it took me out of the movie, with the first time Oprah materializes and is five stories tall. And I think, you know, Reese's character, or Charles Wallace, I forget which, says something about you're the wrong size, or you came out too big, or whatever. And she's made some comment like, is there a wrong size? And I don't have a regular TV. I stream everything. And so on Hulu for a while, every commercial break had an Oprah Weight Watchers commercial. And I'm making absolutely no judgment about that, other than that I have heard Oprah talk about bread many, many, many times. And so to hear then her say, is there a wrong size? I was like, absolutely not, Oprah. You go. You do you. There is no wrong size. And it was delightful, but not for the reasons it probably was supposed to be.
Well, they're smart enough to know they're playing with that. Yeah. It's the same as the hair thing, right? That this movie is so much there's a lot of affirmation going on in this movie. And I think that's great. I think that's part of the power, again, especially for young people who are forming their self-conception at Storm's age or the character Meg's age. I think that's a powerful thing. And we all get that there's like a third meta level to it, right? Mm-hmm. Where we know sort of Oprah's sort of other public sort of personas. But I think that can't be not by design, I think, with this movie.
I have a question. Can we move forward a little bit? We've talked about how many of the characters work for us. What about the villain? What about the evil presence? Did that work for y'all?
It worked for me because Charles Wallace was just so, I already said before, he terrified me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what it is about young children and taking on this force of creepiness, but it was just so terrifying. And I think what was terrifying about it is because they did such a great job of showing that all this darkness that people can build up inside themselves could create that. That's mm-hmm. what scared me, because it honestly made it like more of a reality. Like, mm-hmm. if I constantly put that much darkness inside of me, of myself, like what becomes of me? And so mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. was what made me so scared about it, because it wasn't just, I don't know, let's go with clowns because I'm terrified of clowns. Absolutely hate them. It was really like, this is something that happens in your daily life that you could bring on all this darkness constantly in your life because it's day-to-day things. And I think that's what made it so scary for me and why I love the villain, because it was more of reality for me.
Aslan, what did you think? I turned the question back to you. I'm curious. It sounds like you have a thought.
I have a couple. I, having not finished the book, I wasn't exactly sure how we were going to get Charles Wallace back. And both in the construction of this evil force that seemed to need a face, and that face became Charles Wallace. So in that way, and the way people spoke about it, so particularly I'm thinking of Oprah talking about, you know, each thought, each iteration of negativity mm-hmm. compounds. It very much reminded me of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer style villain.
Really?
Like a big bad for the end of the season. And mm-hmm. and in fact, the final season of the show, you know, it's the first is what they're fighting. And it was the first evil ever that comes in different forms now and is embodied in different ways.
Interesting.
So that the face of it can be your neighbor, can be you in a bad moment, but that lightness needs to outshine that. And of course, the way that they do that is very different, but it felt also having an evil little kid also felt. So in that sense, I don't know if it felt older than like some of it had ideas I had seen previously.
Yeah.
But what was so interesting to me was then having Chris Pine involved in all that, and like that Chris Pine again wanted to make the wrong choice. He's like, leave him, it's cool, let's go back together. I've been here for, you know, it feels like 1,000 years and I just want to go home. And so that part I think was the most, I don't know if innovative is the right word, but novel, I guess. So we've been with these children and things have gone right and things have gone wrong. And then again, an adult is not understanding the full picture and needs to be dragged back. Right. Yeah.
I honestly loved that. The fact that
I know that's what I'm saying. I do too.
Again, this adult is going to make the wrong choice. And I love the fact that this young person was just like, no, that's wrong. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go this way. Like, mm-hmm. in a time right now, as many things are happening in our world, and just watching young people take control of what they feel like mm-hmm. needs to happen. I loved seeing that. Mm-hmm. I was like, this, like, we can learn so much from our parents. I constantly learn from my mother. My mother is by like my biggest role model in my life, but I've always learned from her that I'm going to make my own mistakes. I'm going to go my own way. So as much as I can learn from her, like, there are times that I'm going to choose something that could be better than her choice. And I think that's really important to recognize that, like, young people have, honestly, they're smart, they're intelligent. They're not just human beings who like don't have enough life in them. As they always say, the older you get, the more wiser you become, which I don't know if that's necessarily true. Right.
or the way we talk a lot, and this happens a lot in higher education, as well as I'm sure in grade and elementary and high school as well, but that, well, your brains aren't formed yet. Yes. I'm like, that's not the way to talk about that. And I don't have the right words. I've heard people use the right words. I don't have them with me tonight. I apologize. But like, that's not what it is. So that, yeah, I think Meg has the clarity.
Yes.
Her dad doesn't have in that moment. And for me, this was like, okay, this is the second time this guy has done this, because when he was in his little garage workshop and the walls started moving, he easily could have gone inside and said,
yeah, hey, all, guess
hey,
what?
Dr. Murray, we did it.
Yep.
Figured it out. Come do this with me, or let's, whatever they were going to do. But instead, he walked through it, which I understand. Had that been my life's work, I would have probably wanted to do the same thing. But we're all here because you made a selfish choice, and now you won't make a selfish choice getting out of it. And so I sort of loved him failing in that way so that Meg could have that clarity, but then also the forgiveness of it. I thought was so beautiful as well. And, you know, I always like driving home thinking about, well, what happened the next day?
After
a movie ends, and that they're going to need to work through some of that because I loved the forgiveness, but still that was,
Yeah. That was a part in the movie at the end where I cried again, because he was straight up like, I messed up. I left you and I was selfish and I put my own desires in front of everything. And it made me cry.
Yeah, clarity is the word I had written down like three times in the course of the movie, that especially at the end, where so I'm glad you said it, because it was in my notes. In clarity of vision, clarity of morality. I think that moment, the idea that they're like, that her dad is so helpless is great through the whole story. The ending, I was influenced by having read the book. And I don't remember a lot about the ending, but I remember two things very, very strongly. And I'm not the sort of person, although I'm going to sort of be this person now, but in general, I don't think of myself as the kind of person who's like, well, the book did this, and the movie didn't. So, you know, you have to change the thing. The thing has to change into a different medium. But there are two things that I think could have played differently in the movie that I'm sort of curious why they didn't include. One is that there's a big bad at the end of the movie, at the end of the book, that is sort of the red character in this, the Michael Peña character, except that he's sitting on this throne and he's in this chamber. It feels more like if you've seen the recent Star Wars movies, like Snoke. My memory of it is more Snoke-like. It's an old man, and he can like get in your brain. And Meg realizes sort of like through telepathy that maybe he's just actually a conduit for this like planet that he's on. He's just sort of the figurehead for this planet, but it's this terrifying kind of thing of these kids in front of this authority figure, right? Who is, you know, not sort of quite as goofy maybe as the Michael Peña character is. And then the other thing is that when Charles Wallace thinks that he can defeat it. And when it is taking him over, there's this big struggle he has in that moment of like Meg saying, don't give in. And he's like, no, but I can handle this. And he almost does. He comes so close to defeating it before it takes him over. And I think if we had seen that struggle prior to him being just sort of taken over, because the other thing is that the person who almost saves him in that moment is Calvin, who kind of doesn't have a lot to do in the last part of this movie, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but But he did. He had a purpose that sort of came out of nowhere a little bit in the book that I think the ending of this movie could have used a little bit of. But I don't know. So anyway, I did sort of miss those things. And the ending for me, kind of in the same way, not the very end, but the big fight at the end felt a little bit to me like how I felt it at the end of Wonder Woman, where the movie has to have this big climactic battle. And so I just felt a little let down, but not that this movie has to solve every problem of every blockbuster movie, you know?
No, I agree. I would have liked to have seen Calvin's, because he does have such authority about the world and about, you know, he's the one who introduces us to these beings. And so he does have this strange familiarity.
Charles Wallace, right?
Yes, Charles Wallace. Sorry. The adventure that we're on. So I think that would have been right in line. I wonder, you know, how that, you can ask Jen next time you chat, how those choices were made. And I was thinking as, you know, okay, this is a children's movie, so it's going to turn out okay. But I thought, okay, so are Chris Pine and Calvin just stuck in that weird holodeck room? Or, you know, I wasn't sure where we would meet up with them again, because they did just drop out, bringing us back to the partnership of the siblings. But yeah, when they were, you know, when we cut to them in the backyard, like, oh, okay, good. They made it. Okay.
Yeah. Sweet.
But I missed their journey.
I think the part that when you were describing the book, it was interesting when you were talking about how he was sitting on a throne. And honestly, I think that would have been really cool, because it honestly seems more scary to me than how they were having it on a beach with all those colors and stuff. And I don't know if maybe they did that because it's how we were describing that it's more for children. And so I don't know if that's why they changed it a little bit, but then still gave like the scary, let me lower my glasses, I have red eyes thing. But the throne idea of how you're describing the book, that sounds more scary to me. And so I'm wondering if that's why they didn't do it.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I think So this movie's been hard for me, because there were moments I was very moved by it, and moments where it didn't work as well. Like, I don't have love. I don't love this movie, but I love so much of it. I love so many of the pieces of it. And I think that part of it might be that it's not a movie made for me. I don't know how to say it. I was really hyped for it. And I do not think it's because, like, I love emotional movies. I mean, I have in the last week gone to The Greatest Showman twice, which cried through most of it, which is so weird, because, like, it's so weird. But it has to do with my grandmother, and it's a much longer story. Some people have in the reaction to the reaction have talked about, oh, it's maybe people aren't liking because it's too emotional or because it's for kids. And I love kids movies and I love emotional movies, and I admire the hell out of this movie. If there were things like the caricaturing of some of the quote unquote bad people, the ending, which I would hit me for moments, like her discovering her father and then the father wanting to go home. And those beats worked really, really well for me. And the performances are all great. I think we maybe linger on the planet with the flowers a little too long. Like, I could have seen other, I don't know. There were some pacing issues, I guess, as what I'm saying, to the movie. But when my son sees it, my six-year-old son, whose daughter's not old enough, I think, but when my six-year-old son sees it, I'm sure none of these things will bother him. And he will be enthralled to this, and he will get to see not just a bunch of superheroes, you know, like beating the crap out of each other. And I'm so, so, so glad this movie exists. And I'm going to go to it again. I'm going to take him to it. We'll pay money to see it. Like, I want to support this movie. I don't love it, but so I don't know. Does that make me, am I a bad person? Does that make me,
no,
I don't know.
No, I don't think it makes you a bad person at all. I think, especially when you were saying it just didn't, when you said, I don't think it was made for me. And I think the reason why I loved it so much is because it really hit home for me, like in so many different levels. And so, I don't know, seeing a biracial family on TV, and the fact that it was a white dad and a black mom, and then this fierce biracial young woman enjoying her hair and trying to like progress in life. All of it just made me love it so much. And I think it's because it related with me.
Right, right.
And I think that's why that's honestly, it's why we love movies. It's why we go and see movies, is because we want to relate to those movies. We want to feel something that's like, hey, that's my life too. And I think the reason why I was so excited about seeing a biracial family is because even, I don't know what year it was, I think it was like 2012, 2013, but when Cheerios came out with that commercial with the black dad and the white mom and the little biracial girl, and people blew up and just were so angry about it, and just there were so many hateful comments, and it was mind-boggling to me at the time. I was like, I have a black dad, I have a white mom, and people are still viewing it this way. And so I think that's why I loved the movie, because it also just was personal to me. But I think that's also why sometimes we can be biased towards movies, because it's so personal to us, and why I loved it so much. But
and that's great. I mean, that's the, I mean, I'm not the one in this conversation who went to film school, but, you know, I mean, art is there to connect with us and to share our stories, or to awaken us to the stories of others. And so I think it's more than fair to say, well, I love this movie because of the way it connected to me. I needed parts of this movie right now. I need it. Oprah, who every line she had was an inspirational wall quote, but it didn't bother me because I'm used to that from Oprah, right? But I needed to hear those things. I needed to have it articulated to me that these individual tiny acts of negativity and specks of evil, if you will, accumulate and cause larger things to happen in the same way that single and small moments of light accumulate. I needed that articulated. I knew it. I know it. I feel it every day, but I needed
to see it.
I needed to hear that in a different way. And so I agree, it's not the movie I will point to say, this is the best movie ever, but I needed it right now. I look forward to maybe, I don't know what point it'll come out, but you know, this summer, if it's out on DVD, to maybe watch it with your son, my nephew, or mom, or you know, whoever else who hasn't seen it, or to watch it again and say, how does it hit me differently at a different time? What is there something else I can get from it? In a similar way, we just, since we're talking about Reese, that each time I revisit Wild, because I do, I get something from it, either from the book or the film. So I think, is it the best movie that's ever been made? Not necessarily for me, but I needed it. I'm so glad it's here. I'm glad it's here right now. I'm glad it's back to back with Black Panther. So we started 2018 with a more forward moving landscape in terms of representation.
And giant movies, and giant movies. These are giant movies. And that's, you see, this is the thing that that gets to sort of my conflicted feelings about the movie, because what I have found myself as or more emotional hearing people. I've listened to some great podcasts with people who love this movies. I've been trying to figure out my feelings about it, even just today, and in reading people who are and listening to you guys talk, like I'm moved by how people are moved by this movie, and I sort of love it for that. And that's I think, you know, one of the things that gets sort of called up in some of these reviews is the idea of that Calvin has nothing to do. And part of me is like, okay, yeah, that's true. That's sort of true. But on the other hand, like, how many movies have there been where there's been a female sidekick character along for the run who is given nothing to do? And like, it's okay. So fine. Guess what? We can take it. Okay. Like, we've dished it out for a long time.
Thank you for bringing Calvin up, because that is the one other thing I want to say before I play the game. We touched on chemistry a little bit before, but
I loved him.
And some of our listeners know this about me, some don't. PG-13, like steamy romance, is my wheelhouse. That is what I love in books or in films. Right? I don't. 50 Shades has nothing for me, but you know, steamy Riverdale romance. And let's not even, I mean, that's just the example that came out. It's a different podcast for a different time. So this is not that, but at all. But the chemistry between these two characters, I was drawn to. And then I was like, oh, y'all better be so careful. So I'm so glad that these tweens did not kiss.
Yeah.
I was so worried. So worried they were going to kiss.
I'm really, again, with you, I'm really happy they didn't, just because of how it showed a different set of passion that you can have for someone and like the love that they had, but not go there physically. I don't know. It was just something like new for me to see. And I just, I loved it. And just,
and their children.
Yes. And right? They're literally, so we don't, she's 14 and he's 15. Storm. Yeah. Right. Storm is 14 and Levi, I think his name
and
is.
And so often in, so outing myself as a YA PG-13, love me a high school, anything set in high school. So often we see someone in their mid-20s cast as 16.
Yes. Right.
In part so that I don't feel as creepy having complex feelings about them, right? And in this case, they kept them age appropriate.
Yep. Loved it.
And didn't push it. I'm reminded of, there's something, I don't know, so younger people tell me. there was something recently about Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. And I want to say, like, is a Canadian musician, some other young person who it became clear through their social media that they were flirting or somehow in a relationship. And it was a BuzzFeed article where the writer of the article was saying, everyone stop and just remember, these are children. Don't talk about them like they're adults in a relationship. Don't put pressure on them. Yes, they are both famous, but they are children. So calm down.
It literally was how they were, people were over-sexualizing the young boys in Stranger Things. Okay. And it was so uncomfortable. Yeah. I was like, can we please stop? I'm really glad that we have an amazing young actors, but again, they are, like, your 20-year-old self does not, like, stop. Please stop. Like, it was just too much.
I thought they, so I really appreciated where they took this relationship, that they, again, such strong performances from both, that you could feel their, and when I say attraction, I mean that as humans, like, not
merely
or not necessarily sexual attraction, but Calvin is fascinated by this whole family, right? And that's clear in the book, that, and so, you know, he's attracted to her from the beginning, and how that comes out maybe at the beginning is, I like your hair, but then later it's like, no, I like your hair, and it's, and I, so yeah. I liked that.
We also should shout out the casting director of this movie. Casting directors don't get enough sort of praise, and this is so well cast. This is a woman named Aisha Coley, or Coley. I guess I don't know how to pronounce it. She's done a bunch of Spike Lee movies, and she did Eyes on. She did Love and Basketball and Beyond the Lights.
Because that's the same director, right?
Gina Prince Bythewood directed both those movies. Which, and
wait,
I have
you such said a, she did Love and Basketball.
She cast it. Yep. Yeah. She's the casting director.
Love that movie.
Yeah. Isn't it good? I love that movie.
As do we. That's, we should come back for that one. Yeah. We are huge Love and Basketball fans.
I haven't seen it for so long, but I love her. I love the director, and I love that. I loved that movie when I saw it. And she cast Queen Sugar. She's worked on other, Ed Selma, other Ava DuVernay projects. But she does such a great job, I think, casting all the way down, except for maybe that girl who's the mean girl. But again, that might not be, I love that Andre Holland shows up as the principal. He's an actor who I adore. Yes. I wish there was, like, I always want more of him whenever he's on screen. But anyway, last thing, I just wanted to give a little ding to Aisha Coley for casting this movie.
Do y'all want to play a game?
Yes.
Yes, I want to play a game.
Shanna, I so far tend to create the games for our program, and there sometimes there are points and people win, and sometimes there's just things to share. So in this film, Oprah was delivered to me exactly how I want her.
Yes.
Larger than life, supportive, constantly encouraging me to stretch my limits. Mm-hmm. So I wanted us to each say who, if we had to cast the Oprah character, Mrs. Witch, from someone we know, from someone in our life. Who is your Mrs. Witch? So it's not a game, but it was a share moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I already said my mom is like my biggest role model. So it definitely would have to be my mom. If I went outside of family members, like completely, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go outside of,
I would go with my advisor at Western right now. Her name is Kara, and she is the most inspirational person that I have ever met in my life. She is deaf and she is gay and she is just so, I cannot express to you how much, like, I will literally have moments when I'm discussing with her just about how stressed I am about life. And obviously we're doing this all in American Sign Language. And just there are moments when she just understands how empathetic and how passionate I am and how draining that can be in this world, that she just uplifts me to be like, you can do anything that you want. You just have to keep going. I don't know how, just, she would be my, she's my Oprah. She is my Oprah, like, hands down. I, like, whenever Oprah was helping Storm in the movie, when she was constantly having to pull her back up because she wasn't, what's the word? Where, you know how, like, she couldn't see anything while she was going through the, what is that word?
While she was tessering?
Yes, thank you. Whenever she was tessering, she couldn't see anything. And she kept, like, being in this awful place. And Oprah was just constantly encouraging her and telling her, it's okay, like, you're going to find it. And that's literally Kara for me.
That's great.
That's awesome. I like that. Part of it too is, so, you know, Oprah is out, Oprah, right? But we all have those people that speak to us in our head in different, you know, that sometimes, you know, in life you are in front of this person and they can help you. But it sounds like as you move forward beyond Western, there will be a little bit of, okay, what would Kara say? Mm-hmm. Or how would Kara approach this? And so that, you know, while we all have Oprah, we really do all have Oprahs in our lives, and I wanted to honor them. So
I literally, like, I have her number. Like, we FaceTime when I'm stressed out.
That's amazing.
Like, excellent.
She is, I don't even have words. Like, she's just so amazing.
Tobin, who is your
Witch? You have to go next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So if we're thinking outside of our family, which we share, you and I, Tobin.
We do indeed.
Because it could easily be either of our grandmothers, but we're not allowed to say those people. So for me, it would be my best friend through graduate school and continues to be my best friend, Natalie. She also happens to be the spouse of my advisor from graduate school. So that is how we met. But she plays an independent role in my life as well. And I think she's the perfect combination of the strength and wisdom of the Mrs. Witch with that straightforward, blunt, radical honesty, I put that in quotes, of the Reese Witherspoon. So it's sort of the combo of them. She looks at things very differently than I do. And I need that because I set a lot of rules in my mind of how things should go and what you're supposed to do. And she, you know, knocks cracks in all of that for me in such a beautiful way, but is always supportive, is always rooting for me, even if she says things like, oh, well, if you had your tongue pierced, we would never have been friends. Right? Which goes against an unconditional kind of thing, but I know that really we would still be friends. I didn't know I could quit things, that was allowed until I was friends with Natalie. And, you know, if you have signed up for a 6:15 a.m. water aerobics class and you're not digging it, you can quit partway through. That's okay. They don't care. And so she has shown me such freedom that I have, she's shown me my own freedoms. And I appreciate her for that. Tobin, do you have an answer to this question?
What I'm tempted to say, I don't know if this counts as family, but in terms of closest to Oprah is...
I know
is,
what you're going to say.
You know where I'm headed, right? Our godmother, Nelia.
That is the answer. That is 100% the answer.
That is the sort of, I'm sort of bending the family rules a little bit because I think of her as family in a way, but, you know, she sees people's goodness or not goodness with such clarity, but treats everybody as a sort of on their way to actualized individual. You know, like she meets you on your path where you are and inquires about where you are and very gently nudges you, you know, in an appropriate direction. And celebrates where you've come, how far you've come and what you're doing. I don't know. I don't interact with her as much as I should, I guess is maybe the lesson in all of this for me. I think we need Oprahs in our life. And I think that we would be remiss to not mention our godmother in this conversation, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, well, so thank you, Kara.
Yes.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Nelia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a nice game. That game really fit this movie, I think.
No.
Okay. I was afraid it was going to be over drama, but
no, because
I do like it.
Another thing that this movie gets hit with is being too earnest. And I did not think that does not bother me at all. Like that's,
yeah, no, I love it.
Cause this felt very appropriate to this movie. Thank you for that. Excellent. Game.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you all for indulging in my game and Tobin for the heavy editing you will do in that portion. This is the point as we wrap up where we ask, is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Shanna, as our guest, I'm going to ask you to take that first.
I would most definitely say a step forward. And I'm trying not to be biased of my own personal experiences going with this movie, but I really believe that it's a step forward. Especially when you were talking about in the beginning, Tobin, just how the budget for this movie and the fact that it was a Black woman doing it. Like, I don't think we think about the amount of times that men have constantly had these roles. And people, I think sometimes even my generation thinks, okay, yeah, what's the big deal? Like, it's the 21st century. And it's like, okay, but listen, 50 years is not that long, you know? It's not that big of a span to have just fixed everything. And so when you're having these huge roles be placed in women's hands, it's incredible. And I think sometimes it can get frustrating for me when people are constantly being like, okay, yeah, well, it's the 21st century, no big deal. And I'm like, no, it is a big deal because this isn't, it has not happened. And I think we need to recognize that, yes, as we progress and things have changed, there is always room for improvement. Always. And so I think sometimes, and I feel like I'm nagging a little bit on my generation, but I'm going to do it anyways. I think times we think, oh, we have it so good, so everything's fixed. And that's not the case. Like, there are still many things that we can still do and change. And just because women are no longer seen as just mothers and housekeepers doesn't mean all of a sudden everything's fixed. And they have all these opportunities. Like, we still don't have as many opportunities as we should have. And the fact, honestly, that it was a Black woman doing it. Like, I don't think people understand the significance of that. And I will say it's very interesting how a lot of people are being like, oh, Black Panther has dominated and it's doing way better than Wrinkle in Time. And that movie is just like not that big of a deal. I think it's very interesting how that is the case when it was a Black man actor, director directing Black Panther. And I feel like maybe if it was a Black man director for Wrinkle in Time, maybe it would have been given a little more emphasis of how amazing it is. So I don't know. That's just my,
or at least a little more room to breathe.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Shanna. Tobin, what say you?
I say this is progressive AF.
Love it.
There's just no question. I mean, from top to bottom, the way this movie is put together, who's in charge of it, the kind of movie that they're making, it really does bother me when people have to sort of, you know, are trying to sort of rank this and Black Panther with one another as though there has to be a winner in this thing. And like, you know, if you really do want to get into that argument, we're talking about a superhero movie in a larger franchise with a lot of existing character. Like, it's a whole other fucking thing. So let's not even. The thing I love about it is all that this has been in the press a lot. And if you follow them on, or at least Ava DuVernay on Twitter, as I do, you hear about how they were editing their movies in like adjacent suites on the Disney lot and would like talk to each other and hang out together and like watch each other's cuts. That's awesome. And I would love to be there for some of those cuts. How cool would that be to be with these two great, these two fantastic filmmakers who just are making very different kinds of films? And like, that's for all of these reasons. And as much as I don't, as I said, don't love this movie, I really like this movie and I admire the hell out of this movie. Yeah. It's craftsmanship. Yeah. It's there's, you know, just so on so many levels. And I think it is. It is. I'm so glad it exists, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
And I love the fact that you're saying admire and not love, because I think people sometimes mix the word. They think love is admiring, and I don't think that's true. And so I think it's just important the fact that you're saying I like admire this movie so much, because I feel like that word is just as powerful as love can be. So,
Aislinn, what about you?
You know what? I think it's a step back.
Just kidding. Kidding.
We're done.
No, I mean, absolutely. I know I go last, and so there's, you know, everything has been said, but from the equal partnership in the marriage of the two scientists,
yes,
to the panel of mystical beings diversity is a buzzword, but the, you know, diversity in the panel there, and then it being helmed by a brilliant and beautiful young woman as a main character, as well as a brilliant and beautiful woman. And I mean, beautiful in terms of soul.
Yes.
Director and writer, the care that, as we've said, the care that has been taken with this material and the way that it has been delivered to us is exquisite. And I'm also so happy it exists.
And also, I just want to say how beautifully she made the movie. Like, honestly, I don't think people understand how beautiful it was. Just the pictures and the colors and everything. Mm-hmm. Just side note.
Yeah.
It is a gorgeous, top to bottom, a gorgeous looking film.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think just to final thing, I promise, but, I know, Shanna, you're saying a couple of times you didn't want to be biased. Again, I would say be as biased as you want. There's no such thing as unbiased. For one thing, you can point to this and say, there's a girl that I relate to or have felt like at one time, or just being able to see a family that mirrors something from your own experience, and that this is one of the first times you've been able to see that is so meaningful. And I think will be so important for so many people, regardless of maybe how it mirrors something from someone's, you know, background. But I think that should be given weight. It doesn't, it doesn't have to be, well, I'm biased, but it's like, no, absolutely. I am biased. And this is why this is meaningful. So I'm glad to have had this conversation.
I appreciate it. I really do. Just cause I feel like sometimes when I want to express that, people are like, okay, here she goes again, just being like, there's not a representation enough or blah, 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 blah. But no, really, it was huge for me. And I appreciate you. I just appreciate you noticing that and saying that. So thank you.
Well, thanks. Appreciation fest. Okay. Tobin, what's coming up next?
Oh, next we are going to talk about James Cameron's Aliens, which is a conversation that you will definitely all want to come back for, because we have had it and it is spicy. That's coming in 2 weeks on April 3rd with special guest Nick Jenkins of the Real Bad podcast. So, come back and check us out in a couple weeks for an in-between watch or don't James Cameron's Aliens. That's going to be fun.
I'm just shaking my head. Listeners, it's amazing that we are back together again. The hosts have reconciled. It's going to be fun.
I'm intrigued.
It's going to be wild.
So, Shanna, thank you again so much for taking time out of your busy. It is what our campus calls dead week. It's the week before finals. Thank you so much for sharing your insight and your experience and your time with us.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity.
Oh, yes, please. Anytime. Absolutely. Come back. Is there a social media platform that you would like to plug? This is the time when we talk about our Twitter is or other things that I don't have. Is there a place that you would like people to find you, or would you like to stay under the radar?
Oh, they can find me on Facebook and Instagram mostly, and Snapchat. I actually love Snapchat. It's Shanna.T21, because 21 is my favorite number. That's my Snapchat.
Okay, and Shanna is with two N's.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, S-H-A-N-N-A.
.T21.
Yep. And then Facebook, it's just Shanna Thomas. And Instagram, well, I really should know my things, but I don't. Oh, Instagram is Shanna Thomas 2121.
There it is.
I love 21.
All right. Shoot. Well, mine's not nearly as interesting on all fronts. So if you must, you can find me at SassyNerdMT on Twitter as I continue to learn how to use it. And use it under protest.
You have come so far. I love it. Every time I see that you pop up on there, whatever you have to say, it's great. It's great.
Excellent. How about you, Tobe?
You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, and you can find us at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at contenders_pod. So get in touch with us. Tell us what movies you'd like to see. Please tell us how much you love how this movie looks and feels and share your experience of this movie with us. We'd love to hear from you. We at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all those great shows, things like Too Fast, Too Furious and Keanu Club and Cinemakers, go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub and find them at Cage Club Pod on Twitter.
Find all the shows the Cage Club Network has on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. Those reviews really help us spread the word about the show. We're excited. We hope other people are excited too. And if you leave a comment, we might just read it on an upcoming show. In fact, I would like to share something. It's not so much, it is a review, if you will. So Carly B, or at CarlyBird71 on Twitter, says, "I am her favorite of the two co-hosts on this show."
Oh my gosh.
So I wanted to shout out at CarlyBird71. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much.
You're Iceland's favorite listener to this show.
Exactly. You're my favorite listener. And we'd love to hear how your thoughts change after the aliens.
I don't think her opinion is going to change after aliens.
So yeah, keep the comments coming. Keep the conversation going. We love it.
Keep the fan mail coming to Iceland. It really, really does wonders.
Exactly. Speaking of which, I'm Iceland Addington.
And I'm Shannon Thomas.
And I'm Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
Go find all the shows the Cage... Did you just say that?
Nope.
Okay. Go find all the shows the Cage Club... You did not write this well.
Okay. It's the same as last time. I just changed the color.
No, if you look at it, it's bad.